Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And today we are going to be talking to Porter Cottrell. And Porter Cottrell was one of the top bodybuilders in the 1990s. He got his start competing in the MPC in the late 1980s. And I saw him win the Junior Nationals back in 1988 in Chicago. And then he went on and won the light heavyweight class at the Nationals in 1991, the same year that Kevin Livroni won the overall. And then Porter had a great career as a pro. He actually won the very first two pro shows he went in. And then he took, I think, second or third place to Kevin at the Night of the Champions in 1992, his very first year as a pro. And Porter went on to win the Night of the Champions, I think about a year later. And he also placed very high at the Arnold Classic, and he placed high at the Olympia. And he was one of the top pros in the 1990s. And, of course, that was an era when probably some of the best bodybuilders in the world competed. A lot of people think that the 1990s was the top era for bodybuilding because you had Dorian Yates, you had Sean Ray, Kevin Livroni, Lee Labrada, Nasser El-Sabadi, Paul Dillette, Chris Cormier, just such a ton of great bodybuilders. And Porter was right up there with those bodybuilders. So we got a great interview coming up in a minute with Porter Cottrell. And I do want to mention that we are brought to you by Redcon One. Everyone wants to be a champion. Everybody wants to be the best. And at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout, Total War, is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after your workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and the carb sources coming from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And if you go to Redcon One and order their products, enter the discount code LEGENDS so they know that you listen to the show here at Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, and you will get a 15% discount off your order. And be sure to check out their MRE bars, which are new, and they have a lot of different flavors that they're bringing out every week. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They are the brand I used to win the Masters Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion and also the 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. They also sponsor Samir Benute, 1983 Mr. Olympia, and they're also sponsoring Tom Platz. So when you go to oldschoollabs.com, use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you'll get a 12% discount off your order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, it's been about a week and a half since we had a show on because I've been busy traveling. I went out to California for about 5 days as courtesy of Old School Labs. They sent me out there to do some interviews with some of the legends, including Tom Platz and Samir Benute. And so I got to spend some really fun days out in California. I had a really great time. I went out to Gold's Gym. I went out there on, I think, Saturday, and I met my friend Aaron Reed. Aaron is a real big guy. He's about 6'7", 305, and he was a good friend of mine out here in Tampa ever since I moved out here in 2010. So Aaron decided to move out to California about 9 months ago, and he's doing really well out there. He's trying to make it in the movies because he's such a big guy. He's only about 35 years old, so he's still a young guy. And he actually did make a movie already. He went to India, and he made a movie. I think it was a TV show. It was kind of like their Game of Thrones out there. And he played the bad guy, and he had this huge hammer, and he fought the number one star in India. Of course, he lost, but that was a great debut for Aaron's film career. So he's out there trying to make things happen. So it was great to see him. And it was just great to train at Gold's Gym. I haven't been out there in about 7 years. In fact, I think even the last time I was in California, which was to do a photo shoot for Iron Man magazine, I don't even think I went to Gold. So I haven't been out there in a long time. But it's just that place has so much energy and there's so much activity going on there. There's so many people training there. There's movie stars going around there. It's just really, really a cool atmosphere. If you've never been out to Gold's Gym in Venice, California, it's still the mecca of bodybuilding. Of course, it's not as hardcore as it used to be back in the 80s and 90s, but I don't think any gym is as hardcore as they used to be. But there's still a great vibe there. There's still a lot of energy in there. You get excited just walking in, all the big pictures on the wall. And like you said, you never know who you're going to see when you walk in there. I saw my friend Tito Raymond. I competed with Tito, if you can believe it, 20 years ago back in 1998. I can't believe it's been 20 years. And we went over to Greece together with my friend Rick Schaff. And that's when I won the Natural Olympia contest. And Tito was in the amateur division, and he won the medium height class and lost the overall. But he's a great bodybuilder. And Tito went on to be in a lot of magazine covers back then. He's a great looking kid and had a really good look, real good, healthy look. He's a natural bodybuilder like myself. And he actually went on and competed very well in the MPC in the middleweight class. I think he took second at the 2000 MPC USA, which is unbelievable for a natural bodybuilder. But he's just got great genetics, and he's got he still looks great. I mean, he's 40. He'll be 49, I believe, this year. He's 48 right now. And he doesn't even look any older than he did 20 years ago. He's just amazing. He's an amazing athlete. He's done, like, triathlons. He's done CrossFit. And he's coming back from hip replacement surgery. He had both his hips replaced last year. So it's been about a year since he's had his hips replaced. And he's training hard again. And he just looks unbelievable. He's always in great shape. He's always lean. So Tito's one of the top trainers at Gold's Gym. I think he moved out there right after we competed in Greece, about 20 years. And he married Amy Fadley, who was one of the top fitness models in the world. If you were around back in the 90s, everybody remembers Amy Fadley. She was one of the hottest chicks in the fitness industry. And Tito married her. And now he's got two kids, two sons with her. So very happy family. So he's doing great. And, of course, Tito is the brother, the older brother of Jose Raymond, who everybody knows is one of the top 212 competitive athletes in the world. So after I went to Gold's, I went over to the Firehouse restaurant, which is a very famous place. Everybody goes there. And Tom Platz was there and Samir Banut was there. This was courtesy of Old School Labs, of course. And Breon Ansley was there. Rick Drayson was there. And so I got the chance to sit down and talk to all those guys. It was really cool. And Old School Labs filmed it all. So if you check out oldschoollabs.com, I'm sure those videos are going to be coming up there or on their YouTube channel. So that was really, really cool. And then right after that, they had on the other side of the Firehouse, they had like a pancake eating contest. So it was Breon Ansley versus Danny Hester. So it was the two classic physique Olympia champs. And they had a pancake eating contest, and Jay Cutler was the judge, and Chris Cormier was there, so that was pretty cool. Danny Hester asked me if I wanted to be his partner, because Breon and Danny both had partners, and I just ate lunch, so he said, oh, okay. So, but I should have been his partner, because I think his partner only ate like two pancakes. I could have easily eaten five or six pancakes myself, even after I ate lunch. So anyways, Breon won that contest, and so that was pretty funny. And then on Sunday, I drove over to Rick Drayson's house out in Sherman Oaks, which is about a half hour from Marina Del Rey, where I was staying. And we did an interview for Rick Drayson's show. So if you go to YouTube and go to Rick Drayson's channel, you can check that out. We were just talking about training as you get older, some of the things you have to do and trying to build your triceps up and how much rest you're getting. And he was asking me about my diet. So that was pretty interesting. Rick's got his own studio in his house. He's got a wrestling ring in the backyard because he used to be a wrestler, of course. So that was pretty interesting. I never got a chance before to talk to Rick Drayson, so that was great to meet him. And then on Monday was Memorial Day, so we went out to Muscle Beach. But before the Muscle Beach contest, they had a VIP breakfast at one of the hotels out there put on by Joe Wheatley, who is the promoter of the Muscle Beach contest. And Joe holds this contest on Muscle Beach. It's outside. And they build a stage there, and they have risers there so people can sit down there. But they do it on Memorial Day, they do it on 4th of July, and they do it on Labor Day. So the three holidays over the summer. And then they always induct someone into the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame, and they have little barbells that are like put into the wall around Muscle Beach. So this year, the recipient of the Hall of Fame was Phil Williams. And Phil was always an idol of mine when I was growing up. He won the 1985 NPC Nationals, which was one of the toughest nationals. In fact, when Phil won that contest, Jim Mannion, the NPC president at the time, said Phil was the greatest NPC Nationals champion up to that date. So that included, of course, Lee Haney and Bob Paris and Mike Christian, who was the previous NPC National winners before Phil. So that's how great Phil looked back then. And then Phil went on to win the 1988 Chicago Pro Show. So he won his very first pro show, beating out Gary Stridham and Bob Paris and a few other guys, John Natashak. So he was a great bodybuilder, and he never really had the recognition that a lot of other bodybuilders did because he didn't compete that much. So it was great to see Phil inducted into the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame. So he was at breakfast with his wife. He just got married. And Anita Tinerina was there, Dennis Tinerino's wife. So she was there. Bob Birdsong was there, 1974 Mr. America. So Bob's obviously much older, and he's very thin, but he's in very good shape. So it was great to meet him. I never met him before, so we're going to try and get him on the podcast. And then I saw quite a few of the people that I used to work with at Ironman. John Balick, the owner of Ironman, was there, and Jerry Branham, and Ruth Silverman. They were all there. So it was cool. It was a really fun time. Got to hang out with a lot of my old friends in the bodybuilding world. And then after that, we went over and watched the contest. And so Old School Labs filmed it, and they had me kind of give my commentary on everybody. So it was cool. It was like an old school type of competition. It wasn't like a typical NPC contest, although they did have all the divisions. They had figure, they had bikini, men's physique. So it was quite a long contest. But John Brown was there. He stopped by. And of course, Phil was there, Phil Williams. So it was cool. Mike Glass was there, an old promoter from the IFBB. He's still in great shape. I don't know how old Mike is, but he still looks great. So that was a fun day. And then we went over to Muscle Beach and shot some videos out there. And then I went back to Gold's on Tuesday, and Tom Platz came, and we interviewed him. So we had a great interview with him. We talked about the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And then we were just doing some interviews outside. So we got to talk to Rich Minzer, who used to be a manager at Gold's. In fact, he bought a lot of the equipment at the Gold's Gym. And this was back when Pete Gronkowski and Tim Kimber owned it. So that was really cool. And then I talked to Rick Valente. Rick, of course, used to be on Body Shaping, and he was a top bodybuilder back in the 80s. So he's been back there. He's been at Gold's since the early 80s. So he had some great stories. And we talked to Jerome Ferguson, Jerome Hollywood Ferguson, and we talked to a lot of other guys. And then afterwards, we went out to the firehouse with Tom and with Rick. So they were telling old stories. So just such a great trip. I got to hang out with all these old school bodybuilders, and they were all talking about stories and stuff. And then Phil Williams on Monday, he asked me if I wanted to work out with him, which of course I did. But the only thing is, Phil works out at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I had to go to the gym at 4 o'clock in the morning, and Phil picked me up, and we went to Gold's Gym right when it opened in the morning. And but that was pretty cool. There was a lot of people actually at the gym. And I got to see Eddie Giuliani. He was there. Good old Eddie Giuliani from the old Gold's Gym days. He's a good friend of Joe Gold, and he competed with Arnold. He was in the movie Pumping Iron, of course. So I don't even know how Eddie is. Now, he's got to be like 80 years old. But he's still in there every day, I guess 7 days a week, working out. So I tried to get a hold of him and do a podcast interview with him. He doesn't even know what a podcast was, of course. But Phil's going to try and get his number for me, and so we can do an interview with him. I saw Larry Jackson, who was the 1978 AAU Mr. California. He was one of the best Mr. California winners ever. He's still a big guy. I saw Mike O'Hearn there. Mike still trains at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I used to compete with Mike back in the Natural Universe days back in 1995. So that was pretty cool to see him. And I went back with Phil again the next day on Wednesday, and we worked out again. We did back on Tuesday, and then we did chest on Wednesday, and he's working out with his wife. So that was great to work out with the guy I used to look up to. And then we went back to Gold's again that day and did some more interviews. And then Samir came in, and Samir Banut and I worked out. We did back together. It didn't really go that heavy, although when we went outside and did some T-bar rows, I got kind of psyched up, and I did like 20 reps with 4 plates on the bar. So that was pretty cool. It was cool working out with Samir. He showed us some good techniques that he used for building his back. He's still got a huge, thick back. So that was it. And then went home and went to the airport. So I had a really, really great time. It was so much fun being out there, and it was a lot of great times. And I guess I'm supposed to go back with the Old School Labs at the end of the month. So they want to send me back out there again to do some more interviews, or we're going to do something for the company. So I love going out to California, and I haven't been out there in so long. So it was really, really a great time. So really had fun. And check out oldschoollabs.com, and I guess they'll be putting the videos up there as they get them done. And you can check out their YouTube channel, of course, too. I also want to mention, guys, that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They have a wide range of services that ensure that you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. They have very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So give them a call and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. You can call their office number out in Tampa, Florida at 813-922-8939, but you can also contact them online at floridaalternativemeds.com. That's FLalternativemeds.com. Or again, their office number is 813-922-8939. And they will work with anybody in the United States. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation, and they will also give you 20% off your first order, which is huge. And I do want to mention some emails I got. I got a lot of emails. Of course, it's been about a week and a half since we've been on, and a lot of people heard my interview on Rick's Corner, Rick Drayson's podcast. And again, that's on YouTube. So if you want to check that out, you can go there. I got an email from Scott Barron, and he says, congratulations on your interview. Well done. I'm confident your viewership numbers will grow tremendously. All right. Hope so, Scott. Also got another email from Robert, and he says, is this Mr. John Hansen? I saw you on Rick's Corner on YouTube. Huge fan here. Just wanted to give a shout out to you. I'm a lifetime natural bodybuilder. I only competed twice for fun, but you're a huge inspiration. All right, Robert. Thank you. And I got a letter here from Roy Hobbs, and he says, I was wondering if your book, The MP6 Workout, is available in PDF or ebook format. Well, I am putting that on Amazon.com, Roy. So we are going to have that available as an ebook, not only The MP6 Workout, but also Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1 and my new book, The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. So we're going to put all of those as a ebook on Amazon.com. So I'm working on that. So I will let you guys know on the show when that's available on Amazon. And I got an email from Terry Strand. He was actually talking about the interview I did with Eddie Robinson, which was our Bodybuilding Legends show interview number 28. And that was part one of Eddie Robinson's interview. And he says, such a solid interview. You know, there are other interviewers who can't shut up as they interrupt the champs and then start talking about their own crappy careers. Thanks, John. Always a great interview. Interesting and knowledgeable. All right. Thank you, Terry. Les Hicks made a comment on the Rick's Corner interview I did with Rick Drayson. He says, John Hansen, I've been training seriously since I was 15, and I turn 50 later this year. I've trained with everybody from Fred Hatfield to guys like Ron Love. It's nice to see guys like yourself that understand the importance of listening to your body as it continues to age. I, too, have found that training my triceps with more frequency, heavy with chest and light with shoulders, has enabled them to not only maintain their size, but actually grow. I've also incorporated a lot of band work, as that's really increased the intensity of my contractions, and I put much less stress on my joints as well. All right, thank you, Wes. Yeah, we talked on Rick's interview about, I was telling him how I train triceps twice a week now, twice a week. I train them heavy with chest, like my normal workout, and then when I do shoulders, I do a light tricep workout. And we were talking about the bench presses on the floor that I've been doing, which are a great mass builder for the triceps. It's almost like a close grip bench, but you're lowering your elbows to the floor. You're actually laying on the floor when you do it, and it's only a partial movement, but it really hits all triceps. And I grab the bar kind of close, like a medium grip, and it's really, really been working. That's my favorite tricep exercise lately. So check out that interview with Rick Drayson on his YouTube channel, and you can hear all that stuff that we talked about. Another comment about the Rick Drayson interview, got a lot of comments on that. Rick's got a lot of subscribers. This is Chris Widener, and he says, John Hansen, all the best. People like you inspired me to a healthy lifestyle and way of thinking that I love. And this was about the Dorian interview. It was another comment on my YouTube channel. It was from Steve Ewer, and he says, this was the most in-depth of all Dorian interviews thus far, the best. All right. Thank you. I don't know what Dave Palumbo or Joe Rogan might say about that, because they both interviewed Dorian as well. But thank you. All right. And guys, the books are still available. The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder really, really sold well last month. And a lot of people took advantage of that offer I had. If you bought a training or diet program on my dadbodtoripbod.com website, I sent out a free book of my Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. So a lot of people took advantage of that. So we sold, I gave away a lot of copies of Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder last month, but that's really selling well on Amazon. So thank you for all that have bought it. And thanks to all the people that have bought the MP6 workout and of course the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1. I'm currently working on Volume 2 of Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, which will cover the 1980s competition. So that's gonna be a great book. Hopefully we'll have that out pretty soon in a couple months, because that has been the best-selling book I've done so far with the Amazon books. So that's it. And again, if you are interested in a diet or training program, you can go to dadbod2ripbod. That's the number two, dadbod2ripbod.com, and check out the questionnaire that I have on there. You can fill out the questionnaire and do a either training or diet program, or both, training and diet program. All right, so that is it for our opening, and we are now going to have our interview with Porter Cottrell. So enjoy this interview. Porter's a great guy. It was a pleasure to talk to him. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest with me this week. His name is Porter Cottrell, and Porter was one of the top amateur and then pro bodybuilders in the 1990s. He won the Night of the Champions. And he placed very well in the Mr. Olympia in an era when there was probably the best lineup of pro bodybuilders ever. So welcome to the show, Porter. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Well, Porter, we usually start at the very beginning. The first time I got a chance to see you was in Chicago in 1988 when you won the Junior Nationals. But tell us a little bit about how you got started in bodybuilding. What made you want to be a bodybuilder?
How I initially got started in bodybuilding is I was 8 years old. My father took me to see my first Hercules movie. And from that point on, John, I didn't even really know what bodybuilding was about or even anything at that matter. But I adored the look that Steve Reeves had. You remember Steve Reeves.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the start, or the seed, if you will, that was planted inside my brain. And my initial start, though, was when I was 12 years old, and my brother, my oldest brother named Elvis, he had received a Christmas gift from my mom and dad, and it was a 110-pound concrete weight set. Do you remember those?
Yeah, I had one of those, too.
Yeah, so he didn't use it, so I started utilizing it, and that's how it all started, actually, from that point.
Okay. Well, that's interesting you said that Steve Reeves was your first inspiration to get into bodybuilding, because I've interviewed so many bodybuilders that said that Hercules movie with Steve Reeves, that was the movie that inspired them, and Steve Reeves was the guy that made them want to be bodybuilders.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I didn't even have any idea what bodybuilding was per se, but right, that was the catalyst for me.
Did you play any sports or anything when you were younger?
I wasn't never really into sports until maybe my ninth grade year, freshman. And I started playing football and basketball. But to be honest with you, I quit everything because everything kept interfering with my bodybuilding. So, I let bodybuilding be really my sport, if you will, of choice.
So when you started working out at 12 years old, did you know then what bodybuilding was? And did you want to be a bodybuilder or a competitive bodybuilder?
I didn't even have any idea what competitive bodybuilding was. I do remember looking at old Ironman magazines and stuff like that. And I would go to GNC store and see some photos there. And I remember the Hoffman's Gainweight powder and all this other stuff. But I didn't have any clue. Because actually, to be straight with you, I was a very petite young man. I only weighed 112 pounds when I first started working out. And I found that bodybuilding or weight training was something I could do by myself and be the captain, the team, and all the above. And that's what I really liked about it. And then I just was real easy for me to grow and change, and not even remotely understanding about diet or any meaning of what good food was or wasn't. But it wasn't until probably when I was 18 years old that I thought about competing, to be honest with you.
So were you working out at home the whole time, Porter, or did you go to a gym eventually? Yeah.
No, I was in my garage, actually. And, you know, I remember, John, I would get up 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning before I went to school, and I would go in the garage without any heat during the winter, and I would take a flashlight. This is no joke, my friend. I would take a flashlight and read that little book, you know, that came with that 110-pound concrete weight set. And that's how I started. And I didn't even have a bench. As a matter of fact, I would have my brother hand me the weight, and I would bench off the floor hitting my elbows, you know. And I built my first bench out of wood. I remember that.
Yeah.
So that's really where it started.
So you started off at 112 pounds, and then what was your progress like over the years?
Well, I stayed there, and I went up to about 135, which was a substantial amount over the course of, really, I started really changing around the 7th, 8th, 9th grade. Okay. And when I joined my, first gym when I was 18, I thought I was big. I'm not going to lie to you. And I weighed 138 pounds dressed. So it was kind of a joke. And, you know, I never worked legs, John. I always worked upper body. You know how that was. It wasn't until I joined my first gym that really I started working the whole body. And that's really when my weight started going up.
Right. Okay. So what was it like being at a gym? I mean, was that really inspirational for you to start training around a lot of other big guys?
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, I was naive. I had no clue really kind of what I was doing. And I started paying attention to whatever one was doing. And slowly but surely, I was gaining some degree of insight of what working out was really truly about. Still neglecting to look at the nutritional aspect, though, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the big change for me, because, you know, you get so much information from other people. And I remember my very, very first show I was doing. I was getting all these conflicting opinions from everyone. So I remember going to the main guy at this point in time. His name was Steve Costner. And he was the main bodybuilder for about 3 or 4 states. He was really good at what he did. And I went to him and I said, Steve, I keep getting all these conflicting viewpoints of how to train, how to eat, and so on and so forth. Could you give me some guidelines here? And he said, he gave me the greatest information I ever gained, which was no one will ever know your body like you do.
Mm-hmm.
Garner your own information through reading and educating yourself and do not rely on anyone.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
That's great advice. Because so many people now listen to other people and they just don't know their own body, especially now with all the personal trainers and stuff and all these coaches and everything. It's like nobody really knows what works for them.
It blows me away, John. I had someone the other day ask me, who did I use for a coach or a trainer or nutritionist and so on and so forth. And I said, I did it all myself.
Right.
You know, that's how we rode back then, you know?
Yeah, that's how we all did it back then, right. So what was your first contest then, Porter?
The Mr. 1983 Mr. Louisville was my first contest. I weighed 154 pounds, and I was drug-free, and that was my very first experience, and I can't tell you how nervous I was initially, and that really was what started everything with me. Once I competed the first time, not realizing what potential I may or may not have at that time, that really was the thing that launched me into really focusing on bodybuilding as a competitive way of life, if you will, you know, thinking about competing on a yearly basis.
Right. How did you do in that first show?
I placed second.
Okay.
And it was okay. It was respectable. And John, you will remember, it was the AAU. Remember the AAU was so big?
Right. And
But I will tell you something, and I'll share this with you, how vital nutrition is. And this is when I really connected to nutrition. I remember my body changing drastically. I was little, but I was still very lean. And I remember after that show, John, I said, well, if I can look like this, eating this type of food, why don't I just increase that food and let that be my off-season diet? And I did. And 10 months later, my friend, I did the Mr. Louisville, and I weighed 183 pounds.
Wow.
that was in 10 months.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when I connected to nutrition.
So your weight went up like 30 pounds then?
Yes, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And you won the Mr. Louisville then the next year?
I won the Louisville one weekend and the Mr. Kentucky the next weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was back-to-back.
And then what did you do after that, Porter? What other shows were you doing?
Well, you know how everyone, you win a show, a state show, and they say, oh, you're ready for the Nationals. I said, please, I'm not even close to being ready for the Nationals. So I decided to do something moderately, so I went to the 1986 Mr. Continental USA in Skokie, Illinois.
Oh, yeah, I remember that show. Yeah,
and David Hawk guest post for that, John.
Okay, wow.
And I remember that. And I won my class in the overall there.
Okay.
And after that, I got on the fire department. I started pursuing the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got on the fire department and was out of drill school, I started putting my sights on the 1988 Junior Nationals, which you spoke of.
Yeah.
And so one thing led to another. I was always very methodical about shows I did, mm-hmm. the stepping stones that I made.
That's a smart way to do it. Who else did you face in that Continental USA? Because I remember that title. That was a big title.
You know, I honestly don't know, but they were some top national competitors, mm-hmm. and a bunch of them were from Chicago. I remember that.
Yeah.
But I really can't recall anyone specifically.
Okay. What did you weigh for that one?
I weighed 186 pounds.
So you're gradually going up every show, then getting a little more muscle.
Yeah, little by little by little.
Did you talk to any of the judges at that show? Did any of them say that, you know, you got the potential to be a good pro or you could do well in the nationals?
No. I never spoke to anyone. I really, to be honest with you, because I was a judge, I was judging at that time.
Okay.
I actually made it a point to never speak to too many judges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I relied upon just super close friends that were hypercritical.
Yeah.
And because, you know, the judges are bombarded from all the competitors anyway. Yeah. And I didn't want to do that to them.
Right.
And so I utilized my friends as a source of info to what I could or could not or should improve on and shouldn't improve on.
So let's talk about the Junior Nationals, man, because I was at that show and I saw it, and that was a really, really tough show. There's a lot of good competitors in all the different divisions, and you really were the shining star in that. I thought, you know, you won your class easy, and then you won the overall easy, and you were only a light heavyweight. You weren't a heavyweight, but just had the quality of muscle. I remember your muscles were real dense and hard, and you had really great symmetry, and you just beat everybody just on the quality of your physique, I thought.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that was a big show for me, and I weighed 191 in that show. I will tell you, though, my friend, I remember the prejudging. I must have done something wrong, but it right and wrong at the same time. Mm-hmm. But one thing that transpired in the prejudging, I was holding pretty good amounts of subcutaneous fluid.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I broke out into this major, major sweat on stage. So as the prejudging went on, and I remember talking to Jim Manning about it, and I basically came alive as the show went on.
Yeah.
And I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't started perspiring like that.
Yeah, I remember.
A little bit more finished look.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think I only saw the night show, so I saw you when you were at your peak. But I remember ESPN covered that, and the guy interviewed you afterwards, and he got a kick out of how you knew exactly what calories you were eating, how many, you know, how you brought it down, and you really dialed it in toward the show, right?
Oh, my gosh. John, I used to be so meticulous and methodical about my food. And as time went on, I still was, don't get me wrong. But I realized that your body's a little bit more complex than that, and you can get by with, you know, a few things. Like if something was 6 ounces, and, you know, a 6.1, I cut off that 0.1. That's how fanatical I am.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I never cheated on my diet and all the above. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as time went on, I realized, you know, you don't have to be like that, so rigid like that, if you will.
So then after that show, you didn't do the Nationals that year, right? You just took another year off.
You're exactly right. That was in 89, I did the Nationals, and I placed third.
Right.
And Franco Santarello was first, IQ Gurley second, me third, and I think Flex Wheeler was fifth. And there was another guy from Texas that was fourth. And I was actually sick in the hospital 2 or 3 weeks prior to that show, and I was not my best. I know that. And then in 1990, you remember they very first started the first drug testing?
Yeah, they drug tested on the national shows.
Yeah. And that was one of my most memorable moments, if you will. And I didn't utilize any drugs, to be straight with you, if it's okay to be honest with you.
Sure. Yeah.
I didn't use any chemicals at all other than 10. I was using 10 IUs a week of hemotropin. I remember this for about 12 weeks out, and that's all I ever took. Mm-hmm. And they were testing for steroids, and I was in the best shape of my life, and I was getting ready to go to the night show prejudging, and I got a phone call from Jim Mannion, and he said, I needed to talk to you. So I went up to his room, and lo and behold, they tested me positive for something. I don't even know what it was, John, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
And I wasn't even able to compete. Mm-hmm. And so that was a booger. And I just, you know, I told Jim, I'm sorry. I don't know what, you know, they could find in my system because I really didn't have anything in my system.
Yeah.
And it was, and then I came back in 91 and won the Nationals then, and lost to Kevin, I think, by maybe 1 or 2 points.
Wow.
In the overall.
No kidding. So let's go back to 89, Porter. When you got third, and that was your first Nationals. How did you feel then as far as your potential to be a pro? I mean, you had to be thinking after, even after the Junior Nationals, that you had the potential then to be a pro, right?
You know, I've got to be honest with you. It didn't even enter my mind. Now, let me just say this to you. I had a dream, and you know, from a young age of being a professional bodybuilding, like, you know, when I, especially at around 18, it was my dream. I'm not gonna lie to you. I was a young snotty-nosed kid, you know, that, you know, wanted it terribly, but I never told very many people because you know how people would be pretty critical of that situation when you're only 130, 40 pounds. But it wasn't until the national shows that I placed third that I thought maybe I had an opportunity or chance of turning pro. It was at that point. Not at the Junior Nationals, but at the Nationals in 89.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that's when it really started sinking in that I might have a chance of doing something.
That Nationals lineup was really stacked. You had Franco Santarella, like you said, and a young Flex Wheeler who was only fifth, and Al Q Gurley, who would win it the next year, you know, he was in there. So
yes, in 91. Yeah, 91.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good memory. Yeah, that was a heck of a show. You know, back then, if I may say this to you, those guys were tough, not just the top three, top five. I mean, your top 10 or 15 were tough.
Yeah, yeah.
International level and the USAs and stuff.
Right,
like that. Or at least I thought they were.
Yeah, oh yeah, I do too. I look back at some of those lineups now or some of those pitchers and the great bodybuilders that were around back then. So many of them didn't make it to the pros, and you wonder what they would have done in the pros if they would have made it, you know?
I know, I know. And you got so many pros coming out nowadays, I'm thinking, holy, holy, it's not like it used to be.
Not like it used to be, no. Where just one guy would get it or one guy in each class would get it, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, if I may say this, it makes it mean so much more.
Yeah.
Because you know, back then, you only turned pro in your class at the Nationals and the overall USA. So it was very few people that turned pro each year, you know?
So 91, then, that was your year. And then you beat out, I'm looking at the lineup here in front of me, Daryl Stafford was second, and Bo Matlock was third. John Simmons was fourth, and John Sherman, the tank, he was fifth. So it was like 15 guys in your class, and you beat all of them.
Yeah, I was very blessed. And the only thing I thought about that, I just needed to be in the best condition of my life. And I was fortunate. That was probably one of my better conditions. And I was lucky to have that moment come true, to be honest.
What did you weigh for that one, Porter?
About 193, 194.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I weighed 194.
So your weight was just slowly going up each year, and you're just putting on quality muscle.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I never sacrificed condition. You know, condition to me was everything.
Yeah.
And symmetry, if you will.
Yeah. And like you said, you were real close to Kevin. I think a lot of people have forgotten that over the years, but in that overall pose down, it was really close between you and him. And he was one of the best Nationals winners ever. You know, I think he shocked people by how he looked.
Oh, listen, I remember watching him win the Junior Nationals in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I mean, I thought, holy moly, who is this guy? You know, he had an incredible physique.
Yeah. So then after that, you get your pro card. And what was the feeling then from people you talked to about your chances as a pro after you got your pro card at the 91 Nationals?
Again, I don't remember talking to anyone about where do I go from here. And I remember someone handed me an ISBB pin, and I can't remember the name. I apologize. And I was just overwhelmed with the fact that I actually had turned pro.
Yeah.
And I never thought about for the first couple of months, I never really thought much about doing a pro show until I remember going to California doing my first photo shoots or second photo shoots and stuff like that. And that was an incredible experience. And then I said, you know what, I've got to set my sights on something. And that's when I set my sights on the 1992 Niagara Falls Grand Prix.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was your first pro show, the 92 Niagara Falls.
Yep. And I was fortunate enough to win my first pro show.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you win your first pro show, beat out Henderson Thorne and Nimrod King and Milo Skarsev and J.J. Marsh. I think it was like about 20 people, no, about 25 people in that show. So what did that feel like?
That was exhilarating, if I may say, because, you know, a lot of people turn pros on, but they never win a pro show. You know, that was really the pinnacle at that point in time. You know, if I probably never won another pro show, I would have been somewhat content, but that was exhilarating.
Yeah. I did an interview with Eddie Robinson recently, and he won his first pro show, which I think also was the Niagara Falls show in 1990.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Because he won the USA in 89, and then his very first pro show was Niagara Falls, and he beat out Danny Padilla. And yeah, he even got emotional talking to me about it, because he just got choked up thinking about the memories of it, you know, winning his very first pro show and beating someone like Danny Padilla.
Yeah, which I used to carry two pitchers in my folder at school, Robbie Robinson and Danny Padilla.
Yeah. they
were great.
Yes. So then after the Niagara Falls show, Porter, you go into the Chicago Pro Championships. And I was at that show. I was, you know, I lived in Chicago, so I went and saw that contest. And Kevin made his pro debut in that, Kevin Lavroni, and you beat him, and you beat Terry Pastel. So what did that feel like? Because now you beat Kevin Lavroni, who just beat you at the Nationals the year before.
Well, that was really I didn't know what to expect at that show, to be honest with you, because, you know, Kevin's such an incredible bodybuilder. Terry Pastel, oh, my gosh, one of the most beautiful physiques in the world.
I know. Amazing.
Oh, my, it's incredible. I got to be honest with you, and I think back to my pro career. I wish I would have taken more time, John, to live in the moment and appreciate the moment. And that's one of my biggest regrets, if you will.
Yeah.
And so now that I think back on it, I didn't really take time to think about the magnitude of what was going on in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And but listen, I just consider myself a very, very blessed person to be in the right place at the right time and keep my health, and was able to compete in an era that I think is one of the toughest eras of bodybuilding.
Yeah. And I'm looking at this lineup from that Chicago Pro. You beat out Ronnie Coleman was in it. He got like 11th place, and Bob Paris was in it. And
by the way, which was one of my favorite bodybuilders of all time. So that was
Bob Paris. Yeah. JJ Marsh was in it. Albert Beckles only took 16th place. So you beat some real legends in that contest.
Yeah, there were some great bodybuilders, and it was just a really an incredible experience. You know, that's all I can say. And everyone is. Back then, I don't know what it's like now, to be honest with you. You see certain things transpire on stage, you know, with competitors. But it was just a fun thing backstage, even, John, know, at that time. So it was just a cool experience all the way around.
Were you and Kevin pretty close ever after having competed at the Nationals together and stuff?
Yeah, we used to do guest appearances together, and we do photo shoots together. So we were really good friends. I like Kevin a lot. So throughout our career, we did a bunch of different things together. But, yeah, we were good friends. It seemed that we were always doing photo shoots together for whatever reason.
Yeah, I remember Kevin in that show, and he looked great. I mean, he was huge. That was the first time I ever saw him in person. I didn't see the Nationals the year before, and he just was a little soft. I think he had some water retention maybe, and I think you came in perfect shape again, so I think that's why you won.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to tell you a funny story. I shouldn't tell you this, but I will. You know, I'm just kind of a happy-go-lucky guy. You know, I didn't think much of it. I would talk to everyone and chit-chat. And I remember Kevin just had arrived. We were in Chicago, and I can't remember where the show was. We were in Chicago, and it turned up it might have been Milos, myself, and Kevin, or might have been Henderson Thorne. Somebody, I can't remember who was at all in the bathroom that evening, right?
Right.
Around 5 or 6. And I was chatting back and forth to Kevin, and Kevin goes, well, how are you looking? And I said, I'm pretty good. I think I'm a little bit better than I was at Niagara Falls, whatever, you know, how we chit-chat.
Yeah.
And I remember, I said, God's honest truth, I raised up my shirt, and he goes, well, can I see your ass? So I raised up my shirt. Something happened where I raised up my shirt, and he looked at my abdominal wall. He goes, oh, yeah, you look like you're really tired, or something like that, whatever he said. Well, later on, I'm downstairs waiting for my girlfriend to come in around 7:30 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember who walked up and talked to me and said, they start laughing. I said, what are you laughing about? They said, well, we just saw Kevin upstairs on the Stairmaster.
Shake him out a little bit.
Yeah. That was just so friggin' funny, you know. But, you know, he got me back. He got me back the following week at the Night of Champions to beat me, though.
Right. Yeah. He really seemed like he dialed it in 1 week. He got a lot harder in 1 week.
He looked incredible. Yeah.
But you got second to him that year, right? At that contest, Night of Champions.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure did. Mm-hmm. Play second.
What was your weight around there, Porter?
About 20, probably 2.6, 2.5.
Okay. So you're gaining some size then to compete at the pro level.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that was a hell of a debut year for you in 1992, though. I mean, you win two pro shows and then you take second to Night of the Champions, which at that time was probably the the Arnold was going on then too, but that was probably one of the top pro shows around besides the Olympia.
Oh yeah. Yeah. One of the greatest titles a person can grab a hold of.
Now, how were you able to manage your new pro career? And I'm sure you had a lot of guest posings and stuff along with your firefighter job. Cause I remember you were one of the few guys that had a full-time job the whole time you were competing as a pro bodybuilder.
Oh, yeah, the whole time. We're fortunate enough, we did a 24-48-hour schedule.
Okay.
And I was able to have someone, I had a specific guy that worked for me on my days that I would be gone, and he would take mm-hmm. my shift. So let's say, for example, John, you were a person working for me, and I'm working Wednesday. So I'd say, hey, John, will you work for me Wednesday? And I would be off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So okay. a guy by the name of John Martin always worked for me, and that's mm-hmm. how I was able to do it. And sometimes I would be gone 3 or 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
You know, so I was fortunate that we were able to do that at that point in time.
Yeah, a firefighter job was always probably a good job to be a bodybuilder, right? Because you did have a lot of time off, and if you could be smart and schedule it right, like you said.
That is one of the contributing factors to me pursuing the fire department. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, really? Wow. No kidding.
Yeah, because I knew it would work both as a great career with mm-hmm. a retirement and so on and so forth. And then more importantly, it would be coincide with my bodybuilding.
Yeah.
You know?
How many years did you work for that part?
22 years.
22 years. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I retired when my son was born, and we're able to buy 5 years, John. So I retired with a 27-year pension.
Oh, okay. Great. So what age were you when you started?
25.
Okay. Wow. That's great. You retired at a young age.
When I was young. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was very poor. Very, very blessed. And I'll tell you something. One of the greatest decisions I ever made in my life was to stay on the fire department, because I was fortunate enough to be pretty successful at bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was moments that crossed my mind to quit, you know, the sport or the fire department and pursue bodybuilding so I could have more time. And I'm just glad I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't do it.
Let's move on to talk about the Olympia. This was your very first Mr. Olympia contest in 1992. Mm-hmm. And this mm-hmm. was the one that Dorian won. This was the very first one that Dorian won. So was it a little intimidating to go over to the Mr. Olympia? It was in Helsinki, Finland that year, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you and tell you no. I'll tell you something that transpired prior to me getting ready for the Mr. Olympia. I was working out, and some young guy walks up and said, hey, Mr. Cottrell, can I ask you a question while I'm working out? And I said, well, call me Porter. And he goes, what's it like getting ready for the Mr. Olympia and versus like the Mr. Louisville that you won? And I told him, and this is what I said, John, and this is how mm-hmm. I felt. There was no difference from the Mr. Louisville to the Mr. Olympia to me, how I felt. Because to me, when I was getting ready for the Mr. Louisville, John, it was the biggest show in the world. It was the Mr. Olympia to me at that point in time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah. The one you're training for is the big one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of felt the same way through every show that I ever did.
Okay.
To be honest, yeah. I was amongst friends at the Mr. Olympia. I had competed with them, and I knew them.
Yeah.
I just tried to keep it as another show, even though it was the Mr. Olympia, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. So you got 8th place in that contest. What did you think about the guys in that show? Because you had a great lineup there. You had Lee Labrada and Sean Ray, and, of course, Kevin was in it also, as well as Dorian. You had some really great guys in the top 5.
I mean, honestly, yeah, I was just, if I may say, I was just super proud to be able to stand amongst the greatest bodybuilders at that point in time in the world on that stage. And I can't remember how many total bodybuilders there were, 14, mm-hmm. 16, I can't remember. But it was just a super, super proud moment that a young guy like me, you know, from the state of Kentucky dreamt of, and it was mm-hmm. able to make that come true, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It was great.
That's one of the qualities, I think, also that made you such a popular bodybuilder during your time in the ranks, Porter, was you're very humble and you're very nice to all your fans, and, you know, you had a great attitude and, you know, just a great personality. So I think that's what made you so popular with all the fans of bodybuilding.
Well, I appreciate that. And I kind of always live with first of all, I love being nice. I don't know how to be mean. I'm not going to lie to you. But I just always felt like, I'm one of these days, as I'm going up the ladder and I'm coming down the ladder, I'm going to meet the same people. And
yeah.
I personally wanted people to remember me for the person and not the bodybuilder, because I knew the bodybuilder one day will not exist, but the person will exist. Does that make
mm-hmm.
sense?
Oh, yeah. And that's so true, too, because I know, being a young guy myself, when I got into bodybuilding, that any of the top guys that I met, the ones that were nice to you and the ones that show you respect and are, you know, take the time to talk to you, those are the moments that you always remember, you know, 40 years later. You know, you don't really, like you said, the physique fades, but you always remember how people treated you.
Yeah, personality is everything to me, and how you treat someone. Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So after that Olympia then, Porter, you went and did a bunch of Grand Prix shows, the one in England, Germany, Holland, and Italy. There was an unfortunate event also there with Mohamed Benaziza passing away. He won those last two shows in Holland and Italy. And then the last one is where he unfortunately passed away. What actually happened? It was the result of diuretics, right? And his heart stopped?
Well, no, actually, his potassium level, I'll tell you exactly what transpired, if I can remember. He was excluding water from his diet, and he was taking, and for his water, he was eating green apples, okay?
Yeah.
And it's just this thing he did, John. And he had the same thing transpire at the Arnold, but he was able to pull himself out of it that year, I think, Well, he was taking Slow-K, which is a pharmaceutical form of potassium, as you know. Mm-hmm. And green apples are super high in potassium.
Okay.
And he was taking a potassium-sparing diuretic.
Okay.
So what happened is when we were in Holland competing, and he died in Holland, we were on stage, and it was a long, drawn-out process because there was a wedding, an engagement took place on stage. Well, as we're competing, you know, you do all four rounds in Europe on the same day, same evening.
Yeah.
As we were competing, John, Momo was definitely looked incredible. And I remember before we walked on stage, I could tell you some stuff about this, about Momo, but really weird stuff. But Momo had turned around and he did a most muscular to me. And I just thought, oh my God, this guy looks like one of those dolls, you know? And I mean, he looked that incredible, just not real, if you will.
Yeah. I heard other people say that too. I remember.
Oh yeah. So he was dominant in that show, but he kept going off stage. When they would pull him off, when he'd call him out, do his call outs, he'd go back, but he'd go off stage. We didn't know what the heck was going on. So he did that multiple times, by the way. And we were all backstage, and we were coming up doing our posing routine because, you know, all three rounds go in the process. And we're doing the posing round, and I remember the very first time that anyone knew what was going down. I was standing there next to Momo, and you had Milos Chavez and our Hindus. Everyone was standing around. And John, I said to Momo, because I was eating gummy bears, I tried this sugar thing, by the way, it didn't work, but I tried it. And I said, hey, Momo, do you want a gummy bear? And I promise you, man, just instantly, he turns around, and he's about 6 feet from a wall. Mm-hmm. And he projectile vomited on that wall. I mean, forcefully, puke went everywhere.
Mm.
So during that whole time, John, we're at the show. And then the whole time we go to this after dinner thing, Momo is throwing up.
Oh my God.
He's throwing up nonstop, and he couldn't drink because he was throwing up.
Mm.
And after everything was said and done, he was struggling to stand. And I remember going back, we were staying in Rotterdam outside of Amsterdam. And we passed the hospital. And we were all in a band together. I think Sonny Schmidt was there, Milos Chavez, Henderson Thorne, Terry Pastel. We were all in a band together. And we were in there with Steve Brisbois. Remember him?
From Canada.
We passed the hospital, and someone said we should stop by the hospital. And I think Momo says, I've got it. I'm going to be okay. So we went past the hospital and went on back to the village that we were staying.
Oh, wow.
And what happened, his potassium level was 10 point something. And basically, my understanding is when your potassium level shoots high like that, it starts causing renal failure.
Yeah.
And it starts to vomiting and so on and so forth. And basically, that's what killed him. Is an increased potassium level.
The electrolytes and everything regulate your heart rate, and that's what causes heart rate to stop, right? His heartbeat to stop.
Yeah, and that's exactly the end result, because I was in my room, because, you know, we were going home the following day, and I remember Steve came beating on my door and saying, come quick, because he knew I was a fireman. He said, come quick, Porter, Momo's sick. So I get there, and Al Q and them are pulling him from the bed to the floor, and I remember bending down, and I heard him take his last breath. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but you know when someone takes it, you can just, it's a weird sound.
Mm.
And we started CPR, and did CPR for about 40 minutes.
40 minutes, wow.
Yeah, and roughly 45 minutes before someone got there.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was sad. It was super sad. And his girlfriend, who had never been around bodybuilders, was 22 years old.
Oh, my God.
You know, in shock.
So when you guys were at the prejudging that day, and you said he kept walking off the stage, he was probably throwing up then too, right?
He absolutely was throwing up.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what he would. Nobody knew, though. No one knew, John.
Yeah.
You know, until we got back, everyone got backstage, and we were waiting to do our posing routine.
So it sounded like he was taking these diuretics, and then he was taking all these things with potassium, and it just threw everything off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And if I'm not mistaken, you start getting a critical point, anything over five. Am I right on that, John? on your potassium level.
Yeah. You would probably know more than I could.
Yeah. And if, you know what? I don't know if you remember this, but Mike Marazzo had the same thing happen at the Arnold.
Yeah, I do remember
that. In 94.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it 93 or 94?
I think it was 93 because he came in really ripped and he was, I remember him at a, I saw a seminar with him and he was shredded for that and he got rushed to the hospital afterwards because his heart almost stopped.
Yeah, you're right.
From the diuretics. And then I remember he said he did a seminar after that and he was telling everybody about the diuretics and about how he almost died. And after the seminar, a couple of kids came up to him and said, well, what did you do exactly? Like, how'd you get that ripped? And he goes, did you guys hear what I just said? I almost died. Like, all they were concerned about was how ripped he was, you know?
Oh, gosh. I know, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but listen to me. So Momo wins that show and has a great Olympia in the five shows in Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And he lost his life over it. It's just, it's really sad, if you will.
Yeah. That is really sad that he died on the day that he won a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because I remember you were at that show and I remember the stories about you giving him CPR in the hotel room and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was a very odd thing to happen. I've never had given CPR on a friend. You know, I've done CPR hundreds and hundreds of times, but never on a friend.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. What a shame. All right, let's continue on here. We'll go to 93 and you had a great year in 93 because you won the Pittsburgh Pro. Then you won the Chicago Pro, and then you won the Night of the Champions, which was a huge competition.
I had a great May on 93, back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah, three shows in a row. That doesn't happen too often with too many bodybuilders today.
You know, I stayed on point, and I didn't deviate, and I really had a good hold on the nutritional things.
Now, how did you feel your condition? Do you think you were better in 93 than 94? Were you bigger?
Was I bigger in 93 than 92, you mean?
Yeah, 92, I'm sorry, yeah.
I was slightly, but not much bigger, maybe 2 or 3 pounds, but okay. I was in very, I just focused on my condition,
mm-hmm.
you know? Now, mind you though, John, I would always go up only a couple pounds each year.
Yeah.
You know, more focused on the nutritional thing, getting in better shape, staying in good shape.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go. I remember watching Frank Zane win the Mr. Olympia in the late 70s, and when I read the magazines, he would always say the same thing. He would gain 2 or 3 pounds a year, but it was quality pounds, you know? And it made his physique look better. And he was never too smooth or never overblown, you know, like a lot of the guys are today. He just slowly went up in weight and it was all quality pounds on a great physique already. So it made him look so much better.
Yeah, that's kind of how I live my life. And now I will tell you, there was turning points in my bodybuilding career that I think majorly hurt me. I know for a fact it did, where the sport started getting where he was bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
So I got away from thinking of myself as an artist and started being a bodybuilder. And that's when I really wanted to end my bodybuilding career, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because that's around the time it really did start to change in the 90s, especially with the
mid-90s, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Ronnie, then once Ronnie started coming in, bigger.
Now, that Night of the Champions in 93, Porter, you had a really tight battle with Andreas Munzer, right? I remember the pictures of you guys there. You guys were really tight in that compass.
Yeah, I mean, and then you had, who was third on that?
John Sherman?
Yeah, John Sherman, but
Charles Claremont was fourth.
Yeah, Charles Claremont.
Oh, yeah, great physique.
He was the one I thought was incredible. But the whole lineup was incredible. And Andreas Munzer, yes, and he was such a nice person, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And what a sad thing for him to die like that.
Yeah.
But it was a great show and a great, great victory for myself, you know, regardless, you know. Anyone could have won that show, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that whole top five was great.
Yeah.
What was it like competing in New York? Because I always heard the crowds there were crazy.
You said it.
You said it. They either love it or hate it, right?
oh, my Lord. Yeah, it's either or. And but it was awesome. And to be at the Beacon Theater, you know, and I mean, the Night of Champions to me was probably one of the coolest shows to do. I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just really cool.
Yeah, they always had something going on there where they had different things to start the show, and it was really like a very inventive show, right? It was very original.
Yeah, Dwayne D'Amelio did a great job with that show.
Right, yeah, he sure did. So you think that was probably one of your best victories ever, that Night of the Champions, because it was such a big title?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
No doubt about it, because, you know, like you said earlier, the Night of the Champions was the second to third largest, you know, show you could win other than Olympia. And, you know, the Arnold was coming up. So now it's gotten to a point where the Arnold is the second largest show you can win. So back then it was either or. But the Night of Champions was just such an incredible title to have, if I may say.
And then speaking of the Arnold, the next year in 94, you went into the Arnold Classic and you took third place, which was really good because Kevin won that. And then Vince Taylor, who was a great bodybuilder, he was in second. But you beat out Chris Cormier. You beat out Andreas Munzer, Aaron Baker, Lee Priest, Mike Matarazzo. So you beat a huge lineup there.
Yeah, I mean, all of them were incredible bodybuilders. Vince Taylor is an incredible bodybuilder. Yeah, but you don't remember Paul had the incident of taking too much Lysix. I think he was using
Lysix. Oh, yeah, that was the show.
Remember
that?
Yeah, they carried him off stage. That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, John. I mean, you know, I don't know if he were there, but...
I saw the pictures.
You know what it looked like? He was standing on stage, and it looked like a shark had taken a bite out of his side of his abdominal wall because everything just cramped up and moved over. And yeah, he had to carry him off stage. It was just the oddest thing to ever see that transpire.
Yeah. And he looked incredible in that show, right?
Oh, he looked awesome. Oh, Paul was awesome bodybuilder.
Yeah. He was great. Unbelievable. Yeah. What a freak.
Absolutely.
So how did you feel your physique looked in that show, Porter, at the Arnold Classic?
Good. I actually weighed 212 there, and I'm just going to be real honest with you, okay? Mm-hmm. It's the first time I'd ever tried any growth hormone. In the last 4 weeks, I used about 10 IUs of Protropin. I'm telling you exactly what it was for that. And my weight was just staying. I'm thinking, what the heck's going on? But my condition still seemed to follow through. So I actually put on like 4 or 5 pounds at the Arnold versus the Olympia the year prior. Prior to that, yeah, May of 93, yeah.
So before that, you had just been using the regular anabolic steroids. You never used the growth hormone before 94.
There's only two things I ever used to get ready for a show, and I'm going to tell you what they were.
Okay.
I'm going to be straight up honest with you. I mean, people are like, there's no
please.
Way. I used 100. Let me just be honest and tell you this. My very first Mr. Olympia, I used 150 milligrams a week of Winstrol. 50 milligrams Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I used 200 milligrams of Masteron. And the last 6 weeks, I used Clenbuterol.
Wow, that's it. Unbelievable.
That's it. That was it. And then, you know, my buddy used to think that I was always lying to him, if you will. And so he looked at my logs, and I logged everything I ever did.
He said,
buddy, you weren't lying. I said, no, I never took a lot of stuff.
Right, right.
Never. And I think, actually, Lee Priest took less than I ever took.
Really? Wow. No kidding.
Yeah, he's a gifted one.
Yeah.
That's what I use for my shows, every show.
Yeah. Because I do a lot of interviews with bodybuilders from the 80s and 90s, and I'm amazed at some of these guys who didn't take hardly anything back then. They had amazing physiques.
You know, I relied on nutrition and hard work. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me the other day, and I told them, why were the bodybuilders in better condition in the 90s versus like this era or the latter part of 2000s? I believe they took less chemicals and focused more on the diet and the training. And, you know, anytime you take more chemicals, you have all the aromatization that takes place and so on and so forth. And I think they take more chemicals now, focus less on the diet and less on the training. That's just my personal opinion. And I could be wrong.
I agree. Especially with the training, because I was around during that time. And I remember, you know, the gyms back then, I think were a little bit more hardcore than a lot of these big corporate gyms are today. And the atmosphere in all those gyms was just amazing. Like, you had to train hard, and everybody really, really trained hard. And the main focus was on who could train the hardest. It wasn't on who could take the most drugs, but who could train the hardest.
John, I couldn't have said it better.
Right.
That is on the money. And that's what I think is going on today with in the sport of bodybuilding.
It was almost like a badge of honor if you trained hard. You know, like you had to do that. If you were a serious bodybuilder and you went into these gyms, you had to train hard. It was just given. It was a given thing. If you were in that gym, like the kind of gyms I went to, if you were in that gym, even if you were not competing, you had to really, really push yourself to the limit. That was just the way it was.
Yeah. It was like 101. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
No brainer.
And we looked up to guys like Platts and, you know,
Dorian
and Menser and all these guys who trained super, super hard. I mean, that's what we looked up to in the magazines. And I think everybody wanted to emulate those guys, you know.
And I've been in the gym, and I've watched Dorian train. I remember Rich Kaspari.
Yeah, he's another one.
All those guys train super hard. And, you know, I trained as hard as I still train hard today. I'm just more methodical and meticulous about, you know, things because I don't want to be any bigger than I am.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to get injured as you get older, right?
That's the number one thing. Yeah, I don't want to be injured.
Right, right. going back to your competition career here, Porter, in 94, you went to the Olympia and you took fifth, which was really, really well, you know, because that was a tough Mr. Olympia. That was in, I think, Atlanta and Atlanta, Georgia. And Dorian won, I believe, his third Mr. Olympia. So fifth in that lineup was really great.
Yeah, it was a tough show, and it was a really, really that was another pivotal moment in my career that I just, like, it was just awesome. You know, it's just, I can't express to you, I wish I had the words to tell you what it felt like, but, you know, I was just very blessed. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, people may have forgotten, but you beat out Chris Cormier, Nasser El-Sombadi, Charles Claremont, Andreas Munzer, Sonny Schmidt, LQ Gurley, Aaron Baker, Milos Skarsev, Thierry Pestel, Ronnie Coleman, John Sherman. You beat out all these guys. That's a great victory.
You know, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. You just told me something I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I knew the top five, and I can remember the top five or six, you know. But, what about an incredible lineup then? Wow.
Yeah. Dorian was first. Sean Ray was second. Lavroni was third. And Paul Dillette was fourth.
Yeah, Paul was fourth, yeah.
Yeah.
And who was sixth, if you don't mind me asking?
Chris Cormier. And Nasser got seven, And you mentioned Charles Claremont before. I mean, that guy had a great physique. We just did a series of interviews about the NABBA Mr. Universe, and we were talking about Charles, who won a few of those shows, and he just had a really, like, a perfect physique almost, right?
Listen to me. He had one of the most incredible physiques out there. I mean, it was an incredible, like, we know how we talked about the Night of Champions and Andreas placed in second, and, you know, Charles was in there, and then John and all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, Charles Claremont's got one of the most incredible physiques ever, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, because he had a complete physique.
The beauty of it. It's just in small ways, just incredible physique.
Yeah. Yeah, he had all the body parts, and he always came in great shape, too. I never really seen him out of shape.
No, always, always. Just a great bodybuilder. He's a very nice person, too.
Oh, is he? Yeah, I never mind.
Yeah, he's always very pleasant. Always very pleasant.
And that was the Olympia you did the Rainbow song, right? Over the Rainbow?
Yeah, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. My favorite song of all time. Still is.
Yeah.
Still is.
Yeah, the audience loved that. That was a great routine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always kind of use music that meant something to me, you know. But, yeah, that was my favorite.
And then after that, you went and did the Grand Prix circuit again. So you did, like, three of them, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
What was that like, Porter, doing those Grand Prix circuits? Because I heard it was brutal. Like, you guys would do two or three shows in 1 week, right?
Listen to me. It was terrible. What are you talking about? it was terrible. And I used those shows a lot to try to see what I could do and not do dietarily, you know? Mm-hmm. And I should have never really been experimenting, but it was tough, man. I remember when we did the first Mr. Olympia, John. It was in Finland, my first one. And the next morning we get up, we fly to England, get off the plane, go straight to the auditorium to do the England Grand Prix.
Wow.
That was so tough. And, you know, you're there for the whole day and night.
Yeah.
It was grueling. And then I remember one time we did a show in Spain. I forget the name of it. And we got off, and I don't know, something messed up with the travel or the hotel. Mm-hmm. And they put us in converted horse stables.
Really?
Listen to me. And you know how you have a hotel, you go into the lobby?
Yeah.
The lobby was an individual building, and you go in like a saloon. They had the saloon doors, you know, and, you know, the old cowboy movies. You go
right,
in,
right.
You know, they have a big bar right there, some tables with a fan over the head, you know?
Right.
So we traveled then, and we had to get up the next day and get on a bus and travel 4, 5, 6 hours to the show. I mean, it was different.
So you were in converted horse stables to stay instead of a hotel room?
It was right outside the airport, John. It was converted horse stables, my friend.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, it was still hotel rooms, but they were, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, we didn't stay there for the whole couple of days.
Yeah.
They got us a real hotel.
Okay. How was the camaraderie with the other guys? Did you guys bond or anything? Because you're all going through this together, you know, the traveling and the hotels and the competitions.
Yes, we did. I mean, that was a great time. It wasn't really like everyone was happy for everyone, regardless of where you did or didn't place.
Yeah.
It was just a nice time, and everyone was really cool with one another. I mean, you know how bodybuilders' egos can get away and stuff.
Sure.
You didn't really have much of that, to be honest with you, back then.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it was kind of cool.
when you're talking about when you guys were with Momo and you drove by the hospital and everybody wanted to stop and everything, that's what made me think of that, you know, because you are really all going through it together, even though you're competing against each other. You're all in the same boat. You're traveling and staying at the hotels and eating together and all that, right?
Oh, we're doing everything together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's everything. I mean, it's just a really cool experience to be with some of the greatest bodybuilders in the world. You're basically living with them and hanging out, and it's just cool. Yeah. It's a great experience, and especially now that you bring it up and I think about it.
Yeah. You mentioned, too, about at this point, like in the mid-90s, because this was 1994, you said that the bodybuilding preference, I guess, was just to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you started to lose track, and you started to stop thinking of yourself as a sculptor of your physique, and then just you were just trying to put on more size. Do you think that was one of the reasons that made you want to retire pretty soon? I mean, after this guy, well, you went like another 5 years, but was this sort of changing your opinion of bodybuilding and what you really fell in love with about it?
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you exactly how I defined it, and I did it earlier. My whole career, I always felt like an artist, and that's what I loved. And I didn't really like competing too much, even though I was successful at it. I really loved the process of seeing what I can do with my body.
Yeah.
And that's what I miss, if I may say that. So I always felt like an artist my whole bodybuilding career. But when I started feeling like a bodybuilder and no longer like an artist, that's where the disenchantment started coming into play. And then, John, the sport was getting where you're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I felt like I had to get bigger and bigger. And then I started utilizing, I remember I started using test suspension for show prep because you didn't retain much fluid from it, which is one of the worst mistakes I ever made in my entire life, by the way. It changed the structure of my physique. So my physique was changing, and my mindset toward what I was doing was changing. So that's what made me move toward no longer enjoying what I was doing.
Why did the test suspension change the way your physique looked?
I think, honestly, it made my waist bigger.
Okay.
I can't contribute it to anything else because I didn't change anything else other than I started utilizing test suspension. That's the only thing I changed.
Yeah, it seems like back then the bodybuilders weren't really using much testosterone, right? I mean, back in the 80s and 90s?
Now Ron Love only used, I think Ron Love used anthanate to get ready for a show. If I remember right. But he was so genetically gifted, some people can get by with it. But you know, test suspension, it's water-based. You don't really convert as easily. Mm-hmm. And I was using Arimidex anyway. And I stopped it the last 10 days before a show to make sure I wasn't retaining fluid. But it changed my physique in a negative way, my personal opinion.
Yeah, made your waist wider, you said.
Plus, I was bigger. I was starting to be, my last Mr. Olympia that I was getting ready for, which I got angry 4 weeks out and quit. I was 219.
Wow.
I was basically ready for the show, 219.
What year was that, Porter?
99,
okay. Wow. Yeah, because you figure you were winning these national-level shows in the 180s and 190s, low 190s.
Mm-hmm. I just think it changed everything in a negative way, and I wish I hadn't done it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I believe everything happens for a reason.
Well, I'm sure everybody felt the same. They all had to keep up with everybody else, right? I mean, if everybody's getting bigger, then everybody had to keep doing the same stuff and try to get bigger, right? Yeah.
You have to keep up the Joneses. I hate to say that.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I didn't like doing chemicals. I didn't want to do any more chemicals. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. That's what I didn't want to do anymore.
Right, right.
Yeah. I was concerned about my health.
When Andreas Munzer died in 96, and then you were right there when Momo died. I mean, did that start to affect your mind about it too?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I just thought, I'm going to tell you what affected my, I'm going to give you the exact moment my mind changed toward bodybuilding. I've never told very many people this, and I'm not going to mention his name because you'll know who it is.
Okay.
The last night of the champions I did, we were doing the night show.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going, you know, at the Beacon Theater, you go upstairs, all the different floors, everyone would be in a certain room.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever went backstage, but.
No, I never did.
I remember going to the night show, and I went upstairs, and I was trying to find a room, and there's a bunch of us in there, Milos and a bunch of other people. And somebody is, you remember Nubane, the Tubber G's? You remember Nubane? It was a craze.
Yeah, like the pain drug?
There was a bodybuilder who had a band, just like if me and you were doing heroin or whatever case might be.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shooting Nubane in his arm, intravenously. And I said to the person, I said, dude, what are you doing? He goes, oh, dude, I just got to knock off the edge because he gets nervous, you know? And I just thought to myself, what the hell is going on? I mean, where is this sport going? And I said, That was the moment I started thinking about bodybuilding.
Wow.
Because I had a couple of my friends get hooked on Nubank.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, imagine,
that's really when I started thinking about it.
Being a firefighter, too, you were seeing this from a whole different perspective, I'm thinking, you know, from treating people and, you know, helping people all the time with, I'm sure you saw a lot of stuff on the job with heart attacks and overdoses and everything else like that, right?
Suicides, I mean, you name it, I've seen it. I mean, I could tell you some great stories, but anyway, I've seen a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So then, you're doing the drugs yourself on the, you know, as a bodybuilder, and you start to have to think about it a little bit differently.
I was feeling like a drug. Like I'm a, and you know, in 89, when they passed the laws, John, that drugs were a class, whatever felony, you know, mm-hmm. I remember I would have nightmares, John, that somebody broke into my house and, you know, I'm getting raided, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I'd wake up and I think, oh my God, thank God. It's just a dream because, you know, wow. I lost my job and everything.
Yeah, you would have lost everything. Right.
I hate it feeling like that. I felt like a drug dealer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's just ludicrous, to be honest with you.
Right.
There's no comparison.
So I'm looking at your record here. In 95, you didn't compete at all then, right? After 94?
Well, no. I did the 95 Mr. Olympia.
Oh, you did?
And,
okay.
Yeah, and I went to the Olympia. I was in incredible condition, great mm-hmm. shape. And I'm going to tell you something that not many people, just a couple of my friends know. I dropped out of that show during the prejudging.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was in great shape. Nothing was wrong. And I don't know, John, what happened. I was standing on stage. I was in maybe the third call out. Everything was fine. And I'm going to tell you what happened to me, man. You're going to think I'm crazy. This overwhelming fear came over me that I was not going to do well. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know where it came from, John. But I'm telling you, it was so overwhelming to me. I walked off stage, and it got a hold of me so bad, I faked an injury.
Oh, really? Wow.
To not compete. I'm not going to lie to you.
Wow.
I had to go to the hospital and pretend like something had transpired and everything.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Because of the fear overwhelmed me so much that I was not going to do well. I put so much stress on me.
Mm.
And I don't know where that came from. It's just the first rounds of call-outs had just started. I don't know where the hell that came from, John.
Yeah.
But so I did compete in 95.
So you took 5th the year before. Was it because you were in the second call-out and you didn't think you were going to make the top 5 like you did the year before?
I don't know, because you don't know those kind of things. You know, I mean, you know, they were only calling 3 at a time, John.
Oh, okay.
There's no way for me to assess that, you know, logically. And it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you could have still been in the top 5 or 6.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I was in great shape. You know,
yeah.
Peter McGough had come to my room the day before.
Uh-huh.
And one of the greatest guys, by the way. I love Peter.
Yeah.
He had come to my room and looked at me. And he goes, this is the best condition I've ever seen you in, you know? And it was. I knew I was in great shape. I don't know, and I don't know how to explain it. But it is what it is, and I think back on it and wonder what would have happened if I didn't do that turn left, turn right, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so there. It forever changed my life. It changed my bodybuilding career, I can tell you that. I know that for a fact.
Why, because you dropped out? You think they were looking at it differently then?
Yeah.
Hmm, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, because that's when I started using testosterone, too. So I don't really know, but you know how your gut tells you certain things?
Mm-hmm.
But don't get me wrong. Listen to me. Everyone was always the greatest to me in the sport of bodybuilding. All the judges. Jim Mannion is awesome.
Yeah.
Just a great bunch of group of guys mm-hmm. and girls.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like you were very well-liked, too. I think you were one of the most well-liked pros out there.
Thank you. I tried. I just tried to, you know, just myself. Be myself.
Yeah. Well, it just goes to show you how it can change when you get up to that level and you're one of the top pro bodybuilders and the stress is, you know, the pressure is on, you know, to do better and to place high and also with the drugs and everything else. There's a lot involved with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I wish I could turn back time sometimes, John, at that moment, but mm-hmm. you know, I can't. So, I go on with my life and everything's okay.
Yeah. Well, we all learn. You know, we all make mistakes and we all learn from them, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
So it seems like you went on for a few more years then, Porter. You went like 96, 98, 99. And then what was the deciding thing that you decided you were going to be done? Was it when you went to that Night of the Champions and you saw that guy streamlining the Nubank?
It really took a hold of me as far as the chemical usage.
Yeah.
And then finally, what the straw that broke the camel's back, if you will, I was 4 weeks out before the Mr. Olympia in 99.
Mm-hmm.
Ready. All I had to do is coast for 4 weeks. And I was running late for a cardio session. And I got up, and I remember I went into my laundry room and grabbed a pair of socks, raised my leg up. I'm telling you, this is exactly what happened. I raised my leg up.
Mm-hmm.
And to put my socks on, you know how you get up out of bed real quick and stand up and
yeah.
put your socks on? I tore my hamstring.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And I got pissed, John. And I quit.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm not kidding with you, my friend. Mm-hmm. But it was everything that leading up to that. That just finally just took me over the edge. Mm-hmm. Even though I could have probably still competed, everything would have been fine. I was fed up and I quit.
Yeah. Your whole attitude about it is poor.
I quit. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't contact anyone. I didn't talk to anyone. I stopped using chemicals right then and there, which was stupid, by the way. Mm-hmm. I should have brought myself back. So I suffered dearly for about a year and a half, 2 years. So that was the moment I gave up bodybuilding. And I never have looked back. I've never looked back.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. So did you feel a sense of relief then when it was all over?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Yeah, because I really didn't want to do chemicals anymore. And I was doing more. I found myself doing more and more chemicals.
Yeah.
And I just knew I was done. And I was very blessed to have a great career.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I'm going to be honest with you and tell you, I wanted to end my career on top because I was still placing in the top three, top five at my shows, mm-hmm. you know, qualifying for the Olympia. And I didn't want to be this bodybuilder, if you will, that was placing like Nasser El somebody. I hate to bring him up because I really liked Nasser. But, you know, he started placing at the very end of his shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the last pass.
For the bottom. Yeah.
And I didn't want to do that. You know, I didn't want to do that, John. I wanted to end my career on top. So I said, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, you took third place in the Toronto Pro the last year you competed, right? In 99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think Milos was first. I can't remember who was second. Oh, great guy. I can't remember him.
Pavel Jablonicki. Yeah.
Yeah. Great body. Yeah. Great body. Builder.
Yeah. He actually won and Milos got second.
That's right. You're exactly right. Right on the money. And the guy that placed behind me was a good. Fourth was a great bodybuilder, too. Do you know who that was, by chance?
Claude Gruhl?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Claude. Great physique, yeah.
Yeah. So that was in 99. So then, after it was all over, you just felt a great sense of relief that it was done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wanted to be healthy, John.
Yeah. That's another thing.
I wanted to be healthy.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you were blessed, too, that you had that great career and you didn't go down to nothing. You know, I mean, you had something to fall back on.
Yeah, I was very blessed, and, you know, and so, you know, that's when I kind of had been segueing into my personal training business at that time.
Okay.
And so I had a fire department, my personal training business. I had a meal preparation business going. So
okay.
I was busy. Yeah, I was busy. So I just focused on that.
Yeah. So looking back over your bodybuilding career, Porter, what were some of the highlights? It could be amateur or pro. It doesn't even have to be a contest. But, you know, just looking back over all those years that you were in the bodybuilding field, what were some of the highlights for you? What were some of the better memories?
Two memories. Well, multitude of memories, really. Mm-hmm. Winning the Junior Nationals was really big for me for some reason.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you, there was a moment. I did the 1994 Arnold Classic, and we were at the dinner in the mm-hmm. evening show.
Yeah.
And they had all the bodybuilders at certain tables, and then they had all the other guests. And it was at a dinner thing.
Yeah,
and,
I remember that.
I was chatting with a bunch of people. It was like 10 people at the table. And somebody walks up. And I think it was, yeah, and taps me on the shoulder. And I turn around, and it was Steve Reeves.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and I stood up on the shoulder, and he goes, I just want to let you know I'm a big fan of yours. And I said, the opposite. I said, well, Steve, I'm a super huge fan of yours, and thank you for all that you've done for the sport of bodybuilding and just physiques in general. That was one of the greatest moments of my life.
Wow, yeah.
And I'll tell you another great moment of my life, if you will, that really stands out to me. You remember Kevin went in the Night of the Champions, right?
Yes.
And I placed second. Robbie Robinson placed third.
Okay.
And Robbie Robinson has been one of my favorite bodybuilders of all time. Like, as I told you, I carried pictures or photos, if you will, of Robbie and Danny Padilla.
Right.
And at the very end of the prejudging, a European judge wanted to see Robbie and myself just on stage doing a comparison. So I remember doing our comparisons with Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
And John, so we're doing our comparisons. You can imagine how the theater was. And I'm sitting here. The only thing I can think of, John, is I'm sitting here doing comparisons with a guy that I used to sit in, you know, my 10th grade, 11th grade year looking right. at in, right. in the magazine, and right. I'm doing comparisons with him.
Unbelievable.
You know, and it was just an incredible moment, if you will.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Both those moments are, you know, Robbie, you know, the guy you looked up to, and then Steve Reeves, the guy who originally motivated you to start training in the first place when you were such a young kid. He comes up and he says he was a fan of your physique. That's amazing.
Yeah, that was really a great, great, great moment. You know, but yeah. I have so many more, if you will, but they stand out at me, you know,
yeah.
and I'm just thankful for everything that's transpired in the sport of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And now, if I may say, I realize that really everything is for my son now, because growing up without a father, and I'm so very close to my son, will always be able to reflect back and see what his father did. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's got to be really proud
of
you.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest things I think about when I think about the sport of bodybuilding.
Yeah. Yeah, because you were, you know, you made something of yourself. You were someone who was one of the best in the world in your chosen sport. So that's something to always be proud of, I think.
Yeah, I was very blessed, and I think everything happens for a reason. It was meant for me to be successful, and it was also meant for me to set the weights down pertaining to competitiveness and move on with weight training. And now, mind you, though, I still weight train the same. I eat the same. I just don't do chemicals.
Yeah. How old is your son now, Porter?
He's nine.
Nine?
As a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to pick him up in about 15 minutes from school, and he's the love of my life. And, you know, Don, do you have children?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God. It's hard for me to even think about what my life was like before him.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing.
Is he involved in sports, too?
He likes soccer, and he likes basketball, but I don't push him. I let him do his own thing. He's a lot like me, but he goes to the gym with me all the time.
Oh, really?
And,
great.
As a matter of, he doesn't work out. He hangs out with me while I work, because I work a lot. Yeah. And when he turns 10, though, I'm going to start training him a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to be his trainer.
That's great. Well, that's awesome. Well, Porter, I want to thank you for joining us for this interview. It was great talking to you. I always admired your physique when I was growing up, and I know you're, like I said, you're a great guy and a very nice guy, always great with the fans and everything. And I got a chance to see you compete when you're at your peak and when you started competing at the Junior Nationals, that win you had at the Chicago Pro. So it was really great to talk to you, and thank you very much for this interview. It was, like I said, I've always looked up to you, so it was great to finally speak to you.
Well, John, thank you so much for asking me to do this. I'm usually really reluctant to do interviews, but thank you for taking the time to chat with me. And I appreciate what you do, and it's great that you interview all the bodybuilders of the past and and even present and so on and so forth. So, and by the way, I got to tell you, dude, you look awesome. Let me just say
thank you.
I don't know.
Thank you.
If you don't mind me asking, how old are you, John?
I'm 55 this year.
You look incredible. I got to throw that out there.
All right, thank you.
Impressive physique, and I really appreciate you taking the time, and I appreciate your kindness.
All right. Thank you, Porter. I appreciate you, too.
Okay, you take care.
All right, you too. Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thank you to Porter Cottrell for that great interview. We will be back next week with another interview on the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. I want to thank my sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine, for again sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.